Get Talent Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. I am your host, Ben Cross, with my co-host, Danny Herskowitz. How you doing, Danny?
Great. This is an amazing day.
It is an amazing day because we have an amazing guest today. We have the illustrious Mark Whitby, the recruitment coach, the host of the most influential, the seminal work in our industry for agency recruiters, the resilient recruiter. Mark Whitby, how are you doing today, sir?
I am awesome. I'm excited to be here.
It is an honor to have you. Mark, I have to say, just for kind of everybody's edification out there and for your own knowledge, you were one of the reasons I think Glomo has been successful. When we started our firm 2 years ago doing recruitment, I said to Danny, I was like, what are we doing? How do we do this? He's like, you know what? You got to listen to Mark Whitby. I'm like, who's Mark Whitby? And he's like, the resilient recruiter. He sent me the podcast. I must have listened to 36 episodes, just binging them, right? And Mark, I just got to tell you, like, I think you're just one of the reasons we took off the way we did last year. So thank you so much for what you do with the Resilient Podcast.
Wow, it's an honor. And you guys made a trip over to Scotland several months ago, and you came onto my podcast. So I'm excited to be able to reciprocate and join the Get Talent Podcast.
We've already got questions coming in, Mark. Can we take questions, Mark?
Yeah, fire away. Let's do it.
All right, we're going to do it. Katrin Whitney says, as a newer recruiter, are there resources you would recommend? Mark, I'll let you take that. And then Danny, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Sure.
I mean, that's a super easy one. So what was the name again?
Katrin Whitney.
Katrin. All right, Katrin. So first of all, the fact you're asking that question is a great sign, because the recruiters who have longevity in this business and who do the best are the ones who invest in themselves and are constantly trying to learn and grow and improve. So this is an easy one for me. Free and a wealth of knowledge is available from podcasts. So the Get Talent Podcast, the Resilient Recruiter Podcast, there's a lot of podcasts specific for recruiters, but even just in general, like I listen to business podcasts, sales, marketing, general. So that's a wealth of knowledge right there. But in addition, I would definitely join, you know, an industry association and get yourself along to conferences and, you know, meet other recruiters, you know, develop that peer network, but also just be willing to invest in yourself in order to grow and improve. You'll get a return on that investment for sure.
Mark, a clarifying question here. When you say join industry conferences, are you saying, which is more important, joining the industry conference in your niche and specialism or joining a recruitment industry conference?
So I'd say both for different reasons. So the recruitment industry conference is for professional development, furthering your own knowledge, skills, meeting other recruiters, sharing ideas, leveling up. The conferences for your industry that you serve, that is for, of course, learning your market, which is really important to be an expert and to understand what's happening in the industry that you serve, but also for, you know, sales, marketing, meeting people, networking, clients, candidates, and, you know, being visible so that you get to know people over time. So I'd say both, but for different reasons.
Of the industry, of the recruitment industry associations. So this is something I've never done. I'm huge in our space, in the global mobility space. That's our specialism, right? And so Worldwide ERC coming up, the IAM conference, these are like really big for us, right? We're big there, right? But from a recruitment conference standpoint, I've never been. Danny, have you ever been to a recruitment conference?
No, I never have.
In fact, the closest thing I've been to is what I'm going to go to in St. Pete, which is your mini conference, right? You know, for the recruitment coach. But Mark, of the major associations and stuff, trade associations, which one would you recommend?
So I don't know the location of the person who asked that question, Katrin, because they're different in the UK, in the US, in Europe. But, in the US, NAPS, N-A-P-S, National Association of Personnel Services, I think it is a well-known one. There's also ASA, American Staffing Association. There's an elite group called the Pinnacle Society, which is the top 80 recruiters in the country. But like, there's lots of learning development opportunities out there. You just need to seek them out, really. And we're excited about having you both at our summit in St. Pete in Florida. If anyone wants to learn about that, it's recruitmentcoach.com/Florida. It's going to be a small conference, but it's going to be intense and fun.
and there might be some boards getting broken, I hear.
You're telling the secret, but yeah, we're gonna, well, we have several million-dollar billers who are in the room, who are our clients, as well as who are speaking. We have billing managers who are big billers themselves and also billing teams. But we're going to give people the knowledge, but also the help them to adjust their mindset and break through any self-limiting beliefs and self-imposed barriers that might be holding them back. And the way we do that is with an experience, which is like a physical metaphor. So we're going to do an exercise where we get people to identify any beliefs that are not serving them, potentially limiting their progress rather than empowering them to achieve their potential. And then they're going to smash through it with their hand. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait to do it. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why. I feel like I'm larger than most people that are going to be at this conference. I don't know why. I feel like I'm not going to be able to break the board. Have you ever broken a board before?
I have, and I was so surprised that it worked. I went to a workshop, and it was the same thing in my head. I'm like, no way this is going to happen. And it happened. He showed me exactly how to do it. I'm still surprised that I did it. So awesome. I can do it again.
Well, so that's the whole metaphor, Danny, is that like how many things in your mind are, you know, impossible or difficult or extremely challenging? And then you actually do it and you realize, okay, it wasn't easy, but it was easier than I thought it was going to be. And I wonder what other limitations I'm placing on myself that I'm completely capable of achieving.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about that. And we've got people, you know, gosh, we've got questions coming in. I want to prioritize these. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to forego my question here. I'm going to prioritize these. We got Clarence Thomas here.
Hey, Clarence. I know Clarence. Well, I know him from LinkedIn anyway.
Well, he says, I've never been to a recruitment conference either. Interesting. We got a question here from Brandon Ross.
Hey, Brandon.
Brandon says, do you recommend joining a split network or just make connects and work those? I've never heard of a split network.
Yeah, split networks are good. The one that I know of is called NPA Worldwide. That's a very well-established and long-running organization that's global. So what a split fee network allows you to do is, let's say you specialize in global mobility and you have a customer who refers you to another organization that's not in your industry and you want to help your customer and their person they referred, but you don't want to like dilute what you specialize in. So you then just refer onto someone who's in that split fee network and they give you, you agree on however much you're going to, you know, share, how you're going to split that fee up. But then they're taken care of by another specialist and you get paid for really not doing very much.
This is interesting. Jack Jampel from Stryker Corporation writes in, got a good question here. He says, what percentage of resumes do you revise before you begin the recruitment process? And what are the most common revisions? Mark, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah. So two thoughts. One is that ideally you would get the candidate to revise the resume. You tell them, like, once you've briefed them about an opportunity and they're interested and they want to go forward, then you get them to tweak and tailor their CV for that position and highlight the most relevant aspects of their past experience and track record to showcase how they're an ideal match for that position.
Why is it important to get them to do it, Mark?
Because that's a sign of commitment from them, right? A sign of interest that they are serious about this opportunity. And you could take half an hour. If you had to take half an hour revising every resume that you send out, and you, let's say, send out 10 resumes in a week, then that's 5 hours out of your week. And then you might find that the candidates weren't that interested in the job after all. And then you secure an interview for them and they go, actually, no, I decided not to go for it. So by getting them to do it, it's just a test of their commitment. But what's more important than revising the resume is to write almost an executive summary or some bullet points about that candidate that highlights their quantifiable achievements at their value proposition, if you will, and why, you know, it's a no-brainer, why the hiring manager would be stupid not to give this candidate a shot, at least have a conversation with them. I think that's something the recruiter could invest the time to write, but with input from the candidate.
Mark, stupid hiring managers is actually a topic next segment. So if we can just hold off on that for 1 second. Jillian Guzda has a question. So she's about a year into this business. She says, Mark, how do you cope with the frequent rejection that occurs in recruiting?
It's a great point, Jillian. And recruiting is a tough job. To be successful, you need to cultivate the right mindset, the right skill set. It's does involve a huge amount of rejection, disappointment, setbacks, adversity. Two things is focus on the positives, the successes you are having. So people saying, hey, thanks for telling me about this opportunity, or people who are grateful that you placed them in a position, or the hiring manager who is thrilled with their new hire. You know, just focus in on the positive impact and the real difference you're making to people's lives, to people's careers, and to helping your client organizations to grow. The rest you just have to kind of discard. I mean, this is a big question. We could spend the whole hour just on how to build mental resilience, but also be sure to look after yourself. Make sure you're spending enough investing time away from work, doing your exercise, your yoga, your meditation, your journaling, the things that boost your batteries and recharge your soul so that you've got that, you know, mental resilience to cope with that rejection that's coming at you constantly.
Good tips there, Bob.
I think for me, Jill, the more you go on in your career, less personal it becomes. And you start to realize that. You start to realize this is a job. It's nothing personal. And you know what? It just gets easier over time.
Yeah. And we got John Schlegel coming in here saying,
hey, John.
I had a mentor tell me I needed to periodically take a look at the trophy case when I was feeling deflated by rejection.
Absolutely. I love it. John is one of our customers, so I'm glad John can make it. John's going to be there in Florida. You guys are going to meet him. So here's something I love about LinkedIn recommendations is asking for LinkedIn recommendations, of course, is good from a marketing point of view because it gives you credibility, social proof. Clients and candidates can look at your profile and go, wow, look at all the people who are recommending Danny. All these people are vouching for him, so he must be legit, right? But the other side benefit of getting those recommendations is it's such a boost. You know, it gives you something that you can hold on to when you're going through a rough day or a rough week. And you just go through all the amazing things that your actual customers, the people who matter, have said about you. And who doesn't like that?
Yeah, I like that a lot. We got some questions coming in here. This is great. Oh, wow. All right, we're going to take these in order here. Jack Jampel coming back at us here. Jack says, what are your thoughts on including specific words on your resumes to match words on job descriptions that will be selected in the ATS system? Do you believe this works?
For sure. Like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they're, don't make stuff up, obviously, but if that is your experience, make sure that you use all the different terms that could be applied to that particular skill, technology, whatever it is that you want to highlight in your resume, because yeah, recruiters searching LinkedIn are more likely to find you, recruiters searching their database. Otherwise, the recruiter's going to do it anyway. When they're adding you to their database, they're going to code it up. But yeah, don't hide your skills. Make sure that they're all listed on your LinkedIn profile in particular.
We got one more question here, and then we got a couple questions for you too, Mark. Jason's saying, what percentage of resumes actually reflect accurate skills of applicants?
Yeah, I read a stat. I can't remember the exact percentage, but a surprising percentage of resumes that contain exaggerations, falsehoods, or outright lies, which again is all the more reason to use an external recruiter, someone who's going to be qualifying candidates, fact-checking resumes, and only shortlisting the ones that are the best.
Ethically and practically speaking, how much of a responsibility is it for the external recruiter to validate each and every claim made on a resume?
I think it depends. It depends on what you've agreed with your client. And if it's a retained search and that's something the client has asked for, then great. If it's a contingent, you know, search and there's no guarantee you're going to get paid for it, then no. I guess it depends. But common sense prevails here. Like the recruiter needs to go through the resume with the candidate and just satisfy themselves that this person is who they say they are.
Mark, I got to ask you, you know, yeah, you kind of become the preeminent recruitment coach in the space. How did you decide you wanted to be a recruitment coach? I mean, it's very niche, right?
It is niche. I started out as a recruiter. I was good at it. I wasn't the best. So that's number one. And I wanted to do something that I could aspire to be the best at. Number two, what I did discover as I was trying my hardest to level up my performance as a recruiter is I hired a coach myself, and that person helped me to double my billings. I went from halfway down the leaderboard to the top 15% of the leaderboard out of 200 people. I was the number one producer in my team out of 8. I was the second person in the company for winning retained search assignments. So I was able to significantly improve my results. Again, I was still in the big picture. I was still only good, I would say. But relative to my earlier performance, I was able to significantly improve it. And that was life-changing Ben. It sounds corny, but that really had such a huge impact on me that that inspired me to get the idea of maybe I could one day I could help other people to improve their results. And I just decided that my true purpose, you know, the reason I was put here is not to make placements, but to empower recruiters to achieve their full potential.
I love what you're saying, and I don't think it's corny at all. I mean, when you double your billings, you tend to double your earnings. You know, how many people can walk into work and get a 100% raise? You know, I mean, it is life changing. I mean, you talk about a new tax bracket, you talk about a new house, you're talking about your whole life changes, you know? Yeah. So I don't think that's corny at all. And I think it's awesome. Let me ask you, when you work with new agency owners and new top billers, what is maybe that first thing or two that you kind of have to correct?
You know, it's so specific to the individual, but there are six pillars to a seven-figure recruitment business. It's about identifying where do we need to level up within those six pillars. So obviously there's candidates, there's clients, there's marketing, there's operations, there's team, and then there's strategy. And then within each of those pillars, there's a roadmap. There's a specific step-by-step that people can take to improve their generation of new clients, to put candidate attraction systems in place, to develop a support team around them and make their business run like a well-oiled machine. So I don't think there's one thing necessarily.
Yeah, I like the six pillars. And I think it's really interesting when I go through your program, they kind of like work in a cycle together and feed one another. You know, when I joined the recruiting industry, some people thought I was kind of crazy. They're like, why are you doing that? You have such a good reputation. Why would you do that? And I'm like, what do you mean? And like recruiters, I found out later, aren't always revered and admired. And there's apparently there was a stigma about it that I was not aware of. But Mark, do you hear that? I mean, do recruiters get a bad rap, Mark?
Well, I have a different perspective on this, Danny.
Always so positive. That's what I love about you. I try to get you to go negative. You're like, no, actually, I don't think about that. Go positive.
Now, listen, there's bad actors in every industry, of course, but recruiters, for the most part, make a positive difference to the companies and the individuals they bring together. So as you just pointed out with your clients that you've helped transform recently, we help companies grow. We help people take that next step forward in their career. So that's at least two lives changed, right? The hiring manager and the successful candidate. But then the wider impact of that is significant in terms of, you know, the candidate's family, the hiring organization's growth and profitability. That drives economic benefits to their communities. That creates new opportunities for everybody. So I'm proud to be a voice for the recruitment industry. If there's grounds for criticism, it's usually from candidates. They don't always have the best experience. Could be they receive little or no feedback, for example, after sending their resume or attending an interview. So I don't make any excuses for a poor candidate experience. That's something we need to address as an industry. But what I would say is that employers need to share the culpability for that. Often it's the client's hiring process is broken and the recruiter's caught in the middle. Another issue is contingency recruiting, especially clients who want to use multiple recruitment agencies and pit them against each other. Rarely does that achieve the best outcome. And it's certainly detrimental to the candidate experience. So
why, Mark, can you talk about that just for a second and double click into that?
Yeah.
Why is it not a best practice to use multiple firms on the same search?
What I can tell you is customer satisfaction is dramatically higher with retained partnerships. And that's where it's not a transaction, but it's a partnership. So the employer partners exclusively with one specialist recruiter and ideally pays them an engagement fee. And in that scenario, the recruiter isn't in a race just to send resumes as fast as possible, right? They can take more time to do things properly. When the client uses multiple agencies, they mistakenly believe that that's going to increase their chance of filling the job. Couldn't be more wrong. Because think about it, there is only a finite pool of candidates, right? And all recruiters have access to those same candidates. So by using multiple recruiters doesn't create more available candidates, right? The talent pool is a talent pool. All it does is one of two things. If the recruiter is kind of new and they're hungry for new business and they're sort of just learning their craft, they might take on that search because they have nothing better to work on.
Right.
But think about what you're incentivizing them to do. You're incentivizing them to just get resumes over as quickly as possible. And so, you know, if speed is your primary criterion of success, then what you're really saying is the quality is less important. So that leads to corners getting cut and the communication breaking down. What you'll also find is that the recruiters that have the reputation and the experience and are busy, they're just not going to work on those types of searches because it does not make commercial sense. Why would I spend my time working on something that, let's say the client's using three agencies, I have a 1 in 3 chance of actually getting paid for my work. Why would I do that? So that's going to the bottom of the list, and I'm not spending any time on that. If I am working for another client who values my service and I happen to come across a candidate who matches that contingent brief, I'll send it, but I'm not allocating any time specifically to that brief. The thing with contingency is that if you tell 3 or 5 or 10 or however many recruiters to try and fill your job, nobody is accountable for filling that position. If those recruiters find something better, they're just going to abandon that search and focus on the, you know, higher probability one. Whereas with a retainer, that recruiter is promising that they are going to fill the job. They're taking ownership. They're taking responsibility. They're taking personal accountability for filling that job and doing whatever it takes. The other thing to keep in mind is that recruiter is representing your business in the market,
yes,
right? So surely you want them to be fully invested in this and to understand everything about your business. And you want to take as much time as you can to let them meet everyone in your team, let them visit your office or your factory, let them really understand your culture, because they need to have enough ammunition to be able to tell your story effectively in the market in a compelling way. All recruiters have access to the same candidates, as I said, but getting the engagement from those candidates, especially the top talent that are not looking for a position, that's difficult. That's challenging. That takes thought, creativity, persistence, strategy. And if that's what you're looking for, you need to partner exclusively with a specialist. Absolutely. Recruiters today to compete need to be experts in their niche market. So let me put it this way. Maybe a better analogy is you wouldn't want to your general practitioner to give you brain surgery.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys have invested years understanding and learning the global mobility industry. Does that mean a VP of sales for a moving company, could a general sales recruiter fill that job? Probably, but it's going to take them longer. And the advantage of using Glomo for that search is they're not just getting a resume for a vacancy, they're getting market insight, they're getting added value. In many cases, because you guys are well known in that industry, you might be better known than your customer. So they're actually piggybacking off of your brand, because I know you guys really focus. You do a fantastic job of marketing Glomo with your reach, relevancy, and relationship philosophy. So by partnering with you guys as specialists, the clients are benefiting from all of the marketing, the money, the time, the energy, the goodwill, the reputation that you've built in that industry. And they're benefiting from your position in the market, which, if you go to another recruiter, yeah, they could probably fill a vacancy, but they're getting a lot more with the specialist.
I'm so happy you said that, Fran. Thank you for saying such kind words. And it's true. Great point. Excellent point.
Yeah.
Andy's got some questions for you too.
Yeah. You know, 2022 was an insane year if you ask any recruiter, right?
And we're all rock stars in 2022.
Rock stars. We're talking
good
about
miss,
this like
good miss.
We thought, everyone thought they were amazing. And I think we were. We really were. But this year's a bit different. If you ask any recruiter, it's a lot harder. People have to do more business development. They have to do more client outreach than they did instead of focusing on recs. Where do you think the future is for the external agency recruiter? Where do you think that's headed?
First of all, I just want to clarify something. So the figures that I've seen are that the U.S. economy GDP grew by 1.1% in Q1 and 2.1% in Q2. So you all are still growing. But the challenge is the contrast from the year or 2 years previously, that growth was insane and unsustainable. And so the decrease from here to here feels like, you know, the sky's falling. And for sure, that represents a slowdown in hiring demand. But I would say this is still a good market. It's not a crazy, you know, it's not a hot market, but this is more of a normal market. This is what recruiting normally feels like. Recruiting is hard, guys. Remember this.
I know we had to work our money this year, Mark. It's not what I signed up for, Mark. I wanted it easy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Recruiting is hard. But listen, this thing goes in cycles and it always comes back, you know, even bigger. If you look at the economic growth over the last 20 years, in 2008, it felt like horrible. I was in business in that time. It was awful. But since then, it's grown dramatically again. So, you know, the good times will come again. You just need to be patient, be persistent, keep investing in yourself, keep growing your network, keep building relationships, keep learning, keep listening to the Get Talent podcast. And we'll get through this. You've got it.
Thanks, you know, this is great, Mark. And you've been so generous with your time today. And we could talk to you for a long time, but I also know you're a busy person. So I want to be respectful of your time. Maybe we'll have to get you back on because there's a lot of questions that we haven't even had a chance to ask about AI, about the value prop of even going into this business right now. Is this the time to do it? There's so many things I want to know, Mark. So maybe we can book you in the future again and do this live thing again.
Let's do it.
This is awesome. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. Thanks for all the ones who got in the comments, who participated in the conversation. We love you. We wouldn't have a show without you. Hit that like button. Send a little love out to... Are you in Edinburgh right now, Mark?
I am.
Awesome. Send some love out to Scotland. Hey, we could always use it here in Dallas as well. Thanks, everybody, for checking out the Get Talent Podcast. If you've got a show topic or idea you want to see, DM us. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mark Whitby.
Thanks.
Love what you guys do. Thanks for having me.
Get Talent Podcast.